I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about books, authors, and a good cause. On Friday, April 15th, the 36th annual Book and Author Luncheon to benefit Christomore House will take place. The proceeds support Christomore House, a family and community center that provides services in a stressed area of Indianapolis. My guests are Paige Button, one of the event's co-chairs, and one of the writers featured at the luncheon, Nina Sadowski, author of the new novel, Just Fall. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the Christomore House Guild's 36th annual Book and Author Luncheon. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are here in the studio with me, one of the event's co-chairs, Paige Button, and joining us by phone is Nina Sadowski, who is the author of Just Fall and is one of the writers who's going to be featured at the luncheon. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, John.
Well, I'm going to start, Paige, with you, if that's okay. Tell me a little bit about the specifics of the luncheon. If people want to attend, when is it, where is it? And what is the cost?
This is our 36th annual Book and Author Luncheon. It takes place this year on Friday, April 15th, Tax Day, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We have, as you've said, six amazing authors who all wrote novels that are in different genres, so there's something for everyone. If people want to get tickets, it's easiest to go to our website, which is www.christomoreguild.org. And if you go on there, you can buy tickets through Tuesday, because we're going to close it then. It takes place downtown at the Indiana Roof Ballroom.
And how long is the event? Is it a couple of hours?
It's 10 to 2.
Yes. So it's a 4-hour luncheon.
It's a 4-hour luncheon, but it's a lot of fun. And, it's really always so interesting for me to hear the authors talk about their book, talk about their process, how they come up with these amazing ideas. It's just very, it's fun. And we typically have about 700 to 900 people come, so, it's a good crowd. It's a good crowd. It's the beginning of spring, if the weather would cooperate, so yeah. It's fun to see you. Yeah.
So let me ask this, and I'm setting this up because obviously, how do you select the six authors, four to six, I guess, is what it ranges. How do you select the authors that you're going to invite?
The primary criteria is their books have to be being released between January and March because all of this money is raising money for scholarships and the educational programs down at the Christomore House and the scholarships for kids in the Hallville and Westside area. And the publishers are so kind because they donate a percentage of the proceeds to our scholarship fund. So we want people to buy books, not only to come, but to buy the books, which is an easy sell after hearing from all our authors. So we meet in the summer, and there's a committee, and we just kind of trade a bunch of books that are in that time frame. And this year, it just happens to be, it wasn't planned this way, that all of our authors are women. And all of our protagonists and or all of their protagonists are strong women characters. So it just seems to be the theme. I don't know if that was the way the committee was attracted, but that's just kind of how it fell out.
And Nina, this is your first novel, correct?
That is right.
Correct.
Yes. When,
and I probably should ask, where are we talking to you from? Are you?
Oh, I'm actually in New York. I'm based in Los Angeles.
Okay.
because my career has primarily been in film and television. But I was raised in New York, and I'm here this week. I did, I'm doing a signing at the Barnes & Noble on 86th Street tonight, and last night I'm a hometown girl from Queens, and I did an author salon for the Queens Library to benefit the Queens Library last night. So this is my first novel, and these, you know, it's been in the world since March 22nd, so I'm on the first delicious wave of my life as an author.
Of book and author signings and all of that.
Yeah.
Have you gotten to the point yet where people walk up and ask you where the restroom is? That from my my foray on that. That was, I think, the most humbling moment. They come up and ask you where the restroom or the cooking section is in the bookstore.
No, that hasn't happened. I've only done one bookstore event so far, which was I did a Barnes & Noble signing in Los Angeles. I'm still getting used to the fact that people ask to take a picture with me. I'm always startled by that. I've been a producer for so long, I'm used to being behind the camera and promoting everybody else. And so it's as I said, it's a kind of delicious experience being the center of attention, because being the big ham that I am. But I love, can I go back to something you were saying before?
Because sure.
I love the fact that by coincidence, it's all women writers and also strong women protagonists. That really thrills me, because one of the things I've done throughout my career is act as a proponent for that and for sort of, having female voices heard. So I'm just thrilled that it worked out that way this year at Kristen Moore, which is a, I think, was the first invitation I received as an author. The book was still in galleys. And I looked up the event, which I didn't know. I have actually family in Indianapolis, but I didn't know about the event. And I was so thrilled to be asked for so many reasons. One is that the work that the organization does is just so spectacular. And literacy and education are things that are totally dear to my heart and always have been. In addition to being a filmmaker and a writer, I also teach at USC and I have in the film department. And I've also always done a lot of mentoring of young people, which I just think is one of the most rewarding things one can do. So I was thrilled to be invited, and I'm very excited about coming in to Indy next week.
So as you mentioned, this is your first book, but
yes,
it's not sort of your first experience with storytelling.
Correct.
Could you walk us through sort of the path that brought you to this book? Because you've been a filmmaker.
Yes.
And been around the television and movie world for quite a while. Was writing a novel something you always wanted to do? I guess where I'm going with this is writing a novel a change of direction for you, or was the film and TV work kind of a detour to get to where you ultimately wanted to go?
Well, my career has been so funny, honestly, because I've done a lot of different things. I started as a dancer. I was a dance teacher. I have an undergraduate degree in dance with a minor in writing. I went to law school. I worked as an entertainment lawyer. I segued from that into producing. I was an executive in Hollywood, and then a screenwriter in Hollywood, which was a decision I made out of a personal situation. My first marriage broke up and my kids were small and I didn't want to be gone from them all the time. And I turned my hand to writing, and I was successful at it for a good long time, and it gave me a lot more flexibility. But what sort of brought me to the novel was two things. One, it was something that had always been on my wish list of something to do. And when I started it, I had come off a particularly dispiriting season in the television pitching arena. There are sort of seasons with television where people go in and everyone pitches at the same time their ideas. And I just felt very dispirited by how things went down. And I thought, you know what, I've always wanted to write a book. I have no expectations for this other than my promise to myself to finish it. That was my sole goal. And I didn't even mention it to my friends. I finished it finally, and I asked a friend if she would read it, and she said, when did you write a novel? I have lunch with you every month. You never mentioned this. But basically what I did, I'm now remarried, and I was blending a family of four teenagers, which, you know, is the reason they invented vodka. And, you know, my stepson and my son really weren't getting along, but on Sundays they would sit and watch football together. And so I kind of made Sundays my day just to slip off to my office when, you know, I was could keep an eye on the thing. I could keep an eye on things, but I could also go write. And so on a series of Sundays, I wrote the first draft. And I gave it to a few friends. And one friend in particular, it was my best friend from high school, worked at Knopf Doubleday, not in the acquisition side, on the sales side. But she asked to read it, and she called me and said, I would happily give this to any number of editors in the Random House family, but I think you should get a literary agent. So I did, and then we sold it at auction to Ballantine. And so, you know, for me, not only have I achieved a lifelong dream, every single step of it has exceeded my expectations. You know, so I walk around pinching myself all the time. It's been... You know, I love my editor. I've loved working with her. I've loved everyone at my publishing house. They've been unbelievably supportive. And the fact that, you know, we've sold the book now in seven different other languages, so Germany, Spain, France, Italy, Japan, Serbia, Turkey. And to me, that is utterly thrilling, that this story I wrote, you know, in my little basement office with no expectation, is speaking to readers all over the world. That, to me, is completely thrilling. And when I started the book, I thought, well, since I'm just doing this for me, why not do a genre that I love? And the genre that I chose was a thriller genre, mystery thriller, which I have loved ever since I was a kid and read my first Agatha Christie. And then I decided I wanted to play with that genre and subvert it a little bit. So I wanted to give the book a noir feel, and I thought about, you know, who's the heroine or the girl in those types of books, and it's always, you know, sort of the Hitchcock blonde. So I created a Hitchcock blonde, but I was very certain that I wanted her to be the actor and not the object, and I wanted her to, for better or worse, to make her own decisions. And then I thought about, well, what's the end point of so much pop culture? The end point of so much pop culture is that happily ever after moment. It's when the proposal comes or the wedding happens. And I thought, well, let's start after that. Because that's really a metaphor, I think, for how everyone goes into a relationship. There's all the pomp of falling in love, and or the pomp of a ceremony, and the thrill of falling in love. And then after the wedding and you're just married, that's where the sticky stuff starts, right? So I wanted to talk about that. And then I thought about my cop, and I thought, well, I don't want a cop who's the cynical, you know, drunken, you know, hard-bitten guy. So I decided to make the cop in the book the most pure-hearted and humane, really, of all the characters. So I looked at the tropes, and then I decided to play with the tropes. And most of all, I just decided I was going to have fun. And I did. I had so much fun writing it. It was completely liberating. I threw out any ideas about demographics or time slots or what anyone would think, frankly. I didn't care. And so I sort of just wrote it as a howl from my deepest self of just, what do I want to talk about? And when I teach, one of the things I always say is that what makes good storytelling is a universal theme, something that many, many people can relate to, put through your particular lens. And you need the both, the universal thing that's going to speak to a lot of people, as well as sort of your particular perspective, experiences, and take on something that's going to make it special and different. And so I really thought about the thematics of the book and how the perils and pleasures of intimacy and how scary it is to reveal yourself. And I was actually going through that with my own situation because, you know, my husband and I met in midlife. We got remarried. Everyone seemed fine. And after the wedding, it all went to hell in a handbasket. We suddenly were in a very awkward situation of blending a family that just did not want to blend. And, you know, I thought, well, this is something I'm actually going through of marrying into one set of circumstances and then discovering it's something quite else. Of course, nobody in my life died.
No. Well, and that is a good thing. And yes. I want to talk more about your book because it's a fascinating story. I enjoyed reading it.
And thank you.
I would like to say that. And there is, while you say that it is a mystery thriller, and it is, there is a depth to it that goes beyond that. But I also want to ask Paige again real quickly. We are the deadline for buying tickets if they want to attend the luncheon is next Tuesday?
Next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, and they should go to the website.
Christamoreguild.org.
Christamoreguild.org, and all of the information is there. And it's $85 to attend?
$85 to attend.
Okay, and $55 of that goes toward the mission, if I recall correctly. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Christamore House Guild's 36th Annual Book and Author Luncheon. My guests are joining me by phone is Nina Sadowski, who is the author of Just Fall, a just-published novel. She is one of the writers that will be at the luncheon. And here in the studio with me is event co-chair Paige Button. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Christamore House Guild's 36th Annual Book and Author Luncheon, which will be Friday, April 15th. It'll be at the Indiana Roof Ballroom, and tickets are still on sale. You can pick them up through Tuesday. My guests are Nina Sadowski, who is the author of the just-published novel Just Fall. She's going to be one of the writers who will appear at the luncheon. And here in the studio with me is one of the event's co-chairs, Paige Button. Nina, before we went to the break, we were talking about the path that led to your book. What I'd like to talk a little bit now about is the book itself. As you say, it's a thriller. But, you know, if there is a subtext or a theme to it, it is that, you know, even the people we love at some level remain a mystery to us.
Yeah.
And what I'd like for you to do, I was going to try to do this myself, but I don't want to give too much of away, is talk about the concept, you know, the overarching plot. I trust you far more not to give away anything important than I trust myself.
Sure. Well, the book is told in alternating chapters entitled Now and Then. And the now chapters are linear, and the then chapters are nonlinear. And that came about in a couple of different ways. One was that I've worked so much in film and television, which have very codified structures.
Mm-hmm.
They are very much about the act breaks and the inciting incident and the rules of writing. And so when I decided to write a novel, it was very freeing and fun for me to sort of throw all that out the window and say, well, let me just play with structure any way I want. The other thing that sort of inspired that structure was that my first chapter of the book, which begins with our protagonist, Ellie, alone in a tropical hotel room with a dead man in her bed, is, you know, a kind of a in-your-face, blunt opening to this woman. You don't know why she's there. You don't know what this man is. This dead man is a killed man. He's stabbed in his stomach. He's bleeding. Why she's there with him. Did she kill him? The book starts with a lot of questions. But I thought, well, I want readers to identify with Ellie. I wanted to create not the sort of usual femme fatale or good girl gone wrong that's found in this kind of genre. I wanted to create an everywoman that people would relate to on a more relatable level. And so I thought, well, how can I, if you start with a woman who's killed a man, how do you connect back with her? And since I knew that I wanted the book to sort of deal with that moment after you're married, when you're discovering that the person you married is in fact a mystery, I thought, well, let's start at the wedding. Let's start there. Let's start at that day which represents hope and promise and love and all the things that our culture has taught us is about weddings, new beginnings and joining of families. And, you know, of course, anyone who's actually ever gotten married or been to a wedding know that there's all this behind the scene drama that goes on. And that's sort of an illusion. But I thought I wanted to play with sort of the societally accepted standards and then flip them on their head. Then when I began to think about the story, I did want to give it some depth. And I thought that you would not understand these characters and their motivations unless I went into their backstories and their histories and the things that shape them into the people that they are in the present-day sections. And then I had a lot of fun because I thought, well, if I'm going to be nonlinear, let me really play with that. Let me juxtapose those sections about their past at places that will best illuminate character as opposed to necessarily driving the story along that will, you know, relate something, say, in Rob, the sort of the secondary lead, in his life to something that happens to Ellie, so we understand why they have this intense connection, even though they don't really know each other because they're both hiding massive amounts of secrets from one another. And so what this meant was months with my dining room table covered in index cards, which we had to, every time we wanted to have a meal, I would say, you have to move your index cards, Nina. So, but it was really enormously fun for me because I didn't feel constrained by any of the structural requirements that I've faced so often in film and TV. And I thought it was a very interesting way to tell a story. I'm a fan of nonlinear storytelling, and so I thought that this was the best way for this story.
Well, and it strikes me, though, in reading it, that it is told in very cinematic terms. So did the training that you had as a writer of film and television help you in terms of the story?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because I've been asked if I wrote the book, I sort of envisioned an adaptation of it, which I didn't. I as I said before, I was writing it purely for myself, and my sole goal was to finish in the beginning. However, I will say that because I've worked in film for so long and also taught film now for 8 years, I believe that every inch of the frame should contribute to storytelling. There is no decision about wardrobe or production design or props or lighting or location or sound that shouldn't contribute to the storytelling. Nothing should be wasted. And so when I began each chapter, I would close my eyes and try to envision the scene and really think about all five senses. What would my character be wearing, and what would they be smelling, and what would the air feel like around them? What would they be seeing? What sounds? How would an environment affect the way the scene played and what they felt? Is it an environment that makes someone feel safe or unsafe? And so I would really close my eyes and try to visualize the opening of each chapter almost as if it was a frame of film. And so I think, a lot of people have commented that the book reads very visually, and I think that's why, because I'm accustomed to thinking visually. When you write a screenplay, or if you're producing a screenplay, and I've done both, they're roadmaps, and hundreds of people contribute to that roadmap and determine what the end product is. And in writing a book, it was really just me and my excellent editor determining what that end product was. So I had to really rely on, put myself in the head of someone who would be the cinematographer or the wardrobe designer. And I actually thought about that. What departments, what would the different departments have to do to realize this? And then I tried to think about describing the scenes in a way that reflected all of those different perspectives.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Christmore House Guild's 36th Annual Book and Author Luncheon. I am talking with Nina Sadowski, who is the author of Just Fall. It's a just-published thriller mystery with actually significant heft to it. She's going to be one of the writers featured at the luncheon, and I'm also speaking with event co-chair Paige Button. Paige, probably ought to talk a little bit. Nina alluded to this in the first segment about Christmore House's mission, because this is, while it's a great idea, obviously, to get people together to talk about books and writing, there is another layer or purpose here to the event, and that is to raise funds for the organization.
That's right. The Kristen Moore House, it promotes the welfare of, as you said, an economically disadvantaged neighborhood, the Hallville area. The Kristen Moore House Guild, we raise money and we volunteer our time to help the Kristen Moore House. What the Book and Author Lunch, all of the money goes to both the educational programming at the house, which goes down to preschool. There's a preschool at the house that people who want to work can put their children in, and for scholarships for kids who have either are in the Hallville area or in the Near West Side. And what's unique, I think, or great, is that we provide scholarships for all 4 years of school. And so that, you know, it doesn't pay for their entire education, but it takes some of the pressure off books and other things that, you know, essentials that education can cause. So that is where all our money, it's between sponsorship, ticket sales, and book sales. That's where all of this goes. And
how did this event get started?
We have a woman who is amazing. Her name is Sue Wilson, and she has been, last year was her 35th year, and she worked in a bookstore. So she kind of ran, I mean, she was a one-woman force, and, you know, now our committee is 25 people, and she kind of did it herself because she that was her expertise, was books and selling all of that and working with Barnes & Noble. And she was at Barnes & Noble at the time and came up with this. And it's grown. As I said, we have about, you know, 700 to 900 attendees now. So
how did you get involved with it?
You know, really just, I'm kind of a nerd. I know Nina said she was a former lawyer. So, yeah, I too am a former lawyer, and I love
to
read.
The term I often hear is recovering lawyer.
Yeah, I'm a definitely recovering lawyer. I raise 4 kids now, which is another job. But I love to read, and so I've gone to the event. And I think that really was how I got involved. I just had been to the event. I thought it was great. I think it's so fascinating to hear, you know, like Nina's talking about now, how she does this, how she has index cards on her dining room table, how she put, you know, that would be my dream to write, but I don't have that talent. So, and I think that's a lot of it. You know, people want to give back who have time to get, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have time to give back, but just attending the event makes you want to kind of be a part of this.
Nina, you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but, you know, writing a book, working in film, working in many other media, is a collaborative process.
Yes.
But a book is much more a solitary one, and you're sort of writing there for a long time by yourself with you and kind of the story you're trying to tell. And you really don't have any idea while it's going on how an audience is going to respond to it or how people are going to respond to it. So what does it mean when, you know, obviously there was a selection process, people had to determine that yours was a book that meant something to them. To get an invitation like this, what does that speak to?
Well, I mean, as I said, it was the first invitation I received. The book was just beginning to go out in galleys, and someone from Kristen Moore, who had, I think, had previously had another author represented by my agent, reached out about it, and we sent an advanced reader copy. And I was really thrilled. First of all, because it's my first book, and you know, it's been, as I said before, it's exceeded every expectation I've had. I mean, I never thought I would sell it, much less, you know, in the way I have or all these foreign countries. And, you know, the first thing I heard, my agent sent me forwarded me the email and said, this is a great organization. And, you know, it's an organization that exactly speaks to what I'm interested in, which is literacy, reawakening a love of reading, you know, particularly with kids because they're also screen addicted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my daughter, who's an aspiring writer, you know, when she talks about her heroes, it's Austen and Shakespeare, but also J.K. Rowling, because she felt that J.K. Rowling got a generation of people to read. And I think that's completely true. And so, you know, it's also kind of why I thought, well, I'm not going to try to write some you know, weighty novel that is a great American distillation of our times, I thought, I want people to read this, if anyone ever will, and so I want to do something that is going to speak to a popular genre, because I think that popular genres are often dismissed, thrillers mm-hmm. or romance mm-hmm. are often dismissed, but I think just because you're writing in a genre doesn't mean that you can't be talking about weightier subjects. In my book, it certainly talks about, you know, how difficult it is to love and reveal ourselves and the mysteries that we hide, the cost of secrets. You know, but the book also deals with a lot of questions about moral ambiguity. And it's sort of, it's my personal feeling, and I know I'm not alone in this, that crime fiction is a big part of how we process our own fears about the world. It's how we reorder it. And I think because we live in a world that is increasingly scary and uncertain, I do think there's a real need for this kind of fiction. I think that it allows people to feel like the world can be safe if their characters become safe. And I think that applies to all entertainment. Audiences identify with the protagonist and have a cathartic experience through watching that protagonist experience struggles that they can relate to, that they somehow identify as close to their own. And I think that can be true across genre. So any organization that promotes literacy and reading and provides scholarship, to me, that's just thrilling.
What's your relationship like with the book now? I mean, the other thing is that because it is such a significant commitment, you know, there's the writing and then the rewriting. And
writing is rewriting, by the way.
Yeah, and all of that. I remember Kurt Vonnegut telling me once that, you know, by the time he finished a book, he was so sick of it he couldn't stand to look at it anymore. Are you at that point with
this? No, I don't feel sick of it. I have to say that it feels like somebody else wrote it sometimes, like when I've picked selections to do at readings. I look at it, you know, that sentence really could be better. you know, or how did I end up with that? Yeah. Surely I was sleeping the day I signed off on that. But, you know, it feels a little other to me. And, you know, Ballantine bought a second book for me, which I'm about to deliver, which is called The Burial Society. So the advice everyone gave me into the lead up to publication was just focus on the second book, just focus there. And so I did. I kept razor focus on that, and I just, you know, wrote hard and fast and tried to just not think really about what was happening with Just Fall. But now we are in conversations about doing an adaptation of it for film or television, and so I'm having to revisit it in a different way, which is certainly interesting. Because I worked so hard not to think about that, and now I'm having to think about that. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to make an announcement about that soon, with more details. But, I think it's sort of like having a baby, having a book. You love it, and sometimes you look at it and you feel completely distant from it, and sometimes you look at it and you love it unreservedly. It sort of takes on a life of its own. What's been fascinating to me is the different things that different people identify within it or love about it. You know, certainly I've had a lot of love for the moral ambiguity and the questions I'm asking about relationships, but other people have also really fixated on sort of the gangster aspect and love that, or the noir aspect. I just did an interview for the LA Review of Books, which was all about, you know, the book's sort of antecedents in both noir, both books and film. So I'm kind of loving the fact that through other people's eyes, I'm seeing different aspects of the book. But I don't hate it. I love it. I think, you know, I feel like it is a culmination of a lifelong dream, and therefore, how could I do anything but love it?
Will it be easy? And we've got about 30, 45 seconds here before the break. Will it be easy, though, if there's going to be an adaptation, to hand it over, put it in other hands?
No, it'll be terrible. So I expect to stay involved.
But given, I mean, other people are going to have input, though, obviously.
Yes,
more input, because it is a collaborative process.
Yes, and I'm actually looking forward to that in some ways, because, you know, the collaboration means that you have a lot of voices in your ear, mm-hmm. and there is a freedom in being a novelist and just being on your own. But I think that I like people, and I like working with people. And I'm smart enough also to recognize that the smartest thing you can do sometimes is take someone else's good idea and just get your ego out of the way and say, yes, you're right, that's a better idea, if it's going to make the work better. That's something I try to teach my students. It's something I really believe, and it's not always easy. But I think if you look at what is...
Nina, we got to take a break here. Mm-hmm. We'll pick up on the other side. We are talking with Nina Sadowski, who is the author of Just Fall and the Christmore House Guild's book and author lunch and co-chair Paige Button here on No Limits today. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the Christmore House Guild's 36th annual book and author luncheon. It's an event that will be held next Friday, April 15th from 10 to 2. You can buy tickets at the Christmore House website. The cost to attend is $85. My guests are Nina Sadowski, who is the author of Just Fall, a just-published novel. She's going to be one of the writers featured at the luncheon, and the event co-chair, Paige Button. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So, Nina, I'm going to ask this. Now, since writing a book was a new experience for you, what were the lessons learned along the way?
Wow, that's a really good question. Well, I think the biggest lesson I learned was to really trust my own voice. I think because I started in the film business as a producer and then moved over to writing, and I didn't really realize it until I wrote a book. But I was sort of trained by my role in every project I worked in to be the person who effected compromise and moved everyone towards a common vision and was always trying to get everyone to see everyone else's point of view. And that was a really good quality in me as a producer. When I switched over to writing, I began to realize that sometimes it made me a little too deferential. I would sort of nod politely at notes I thought were bad, or, you know, I was once in a meeting with someone who clearly hadn't read the current draft based on the notes that he was giving, and I was almost afraid to correct him because I was afraid of stirring the pot. And what I found in writing the book, because I had no expectations and I had no one breathing down my neck for it, I just allowed my voice to be totally free. I allowed myself to take risks with language and with structure. And I think that people say that when they read it, they can tell that I felt free in the writing. And I think that was the greatest lesson I learned, is that if you really write from your heart and your soul and you let go of expectations or fear of criticism or fear of being judged, if you just let go of all fear, leave that at the door and let your voice just rise, that you will get a purer and better product. So I think that. And I think the other thing that I learned, which relates to that thing about being collaborative, is that you can find a balance. I'm user-friendly in everything I do. I believe it's important. I think that through cooperation and collaboration, we often get our best work. But I learned that there's also times where you have to just take a stand and have your point of view and your voice. So I think I found a better balance than I had before.
What was the hardest thing about making the switch and becoming a novelist?
Well, this may be not the right answer, but there was nothing hard about it.
Okay.
I just sort of went down on Sundays and said, I'm going to write. And because I've written my whole life, even when I wasn't doing it professionally, you know, I've often faced that blank page. I think where it became hard, actually, was after the book was bought. And, you know, I worked with a wonderful editor, and she hates that I give her so much praise, but I do because she's wonderful. And she, you know, loved the book, but we really battled it out, particularly on the ending. And she really wanted me to keep the ending psychological, and I kept having this impulse, which I think came out of years of film and television, to push the ending towards car chases and gun battles and people going off cliffs. And she kept saying, no, the book is so psychological. Keep it there. Keep it there. And I probably, you know, rewrote that ending at least six times, the last third of the book, finding my way with that. So that was hard. But, you know, I also recognize that Kate, my editor, is a genius at what she does. She's preeminent in her field. She edits a lot of big thriller writers, including Lee Child. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I was smart enough to recognize that someone else had a good idea and I should take it. It required me letting go of certain ideas I had. For example, there's a character in the book, and I won't give anything away, but there's a character in the book who is revealed at the very end to not be who he seems and to be kind of a bad guy. And in my initial draft, he was a good guy, and that was hard for me. And it was sort of on Kate's insistence that we needed another twist and we needed to upend things one more time. But I had this idea about this character and who he was, and letting go of that was a struggle for me.
Was it hard to let go of the characters when you finished the writing and finished the book?
Well, no, because I expect that I will go back to them. The book is sort of deliberately open-ended, and mm-hmm. while the second book that Ballantyne has bought, The Burial Society, is a standalone, it doesn't involve the same characters, mm-hmm. I do intend to go back to these characters down the road. I think there's been a lot of interest for a book based on the cop character in mm-hmm. St. Lucia. His name is Lucien Broussard, and mm-hmm. my kind of good-hearted cop. There's been interest in a standalone about him, and also from people in finding out what happens to Rob and Ellie. So I don't feel like I've let go of them, but it was nice to say goodbye to them for a while and plunge into creating new characters. That was also fun, because I think that part of creating people, you know, it's one of the most fun things about being a writer. It's figuring out who these people are, what makes them tick, and how they're going to behave in situations. And that's really where what I love about being a writer, which is both observing people and reading about people and then creating characters, comes into play.
What was the best thing about writing the book?
Well, the best thing about the writing process was feeling so free. And the best thing post-selling it has been the amount of love the book is receiving, which, you know, is thrilling to me. You know, almost every day there's some new review or blog post, and, you know, that, you know, people are calling me brilliant or, you know, thrilling, and I'm not adverse to flattery like anyone else. You know? But also just that the book is speaking to people and that people get what I was trying to do, that I feel so heard and understood in my intent with it, that you know, because I did think there was a risk that people would blow it off and just say, well, it's a pop thriller, you know, fun, but that's it. And the fact that people are finding the deeper meanings that I laid into the book, that has really been exciting for me. You know, it's nice to get love. I mean, let's face it.
Well, and speaking of that, when you come here to the luncheon next
yes.
Friday, what do you plan to talk with the audience about?
Well, you know, I will ask for some guidance from the organizers about what they think the audience would like to hear. But I think, you know, I know that what I'm always interested in hearing about from other authors is what inspires them, who else they read, what they're trying to achieve with their work, what their process is, what their greatest disappointments have been, as well as their triumphs, because I firmly believe that we learn more from our failures and disappointments than we do from our wins. You know, I think a little bit of that, and I know that people are sort of generally interested, or seem to have been in my short career as a novelist, in sort of my transition from film to books, and the why of that and the how of that. So I'll probably talk about that some too.
And Paige, you know, this is going to be a big crowd, a lot of people here. It's a four-hour event. Other than raising money, what makes the luncheon, what makes it a successful event for you, would you say?
I think it's so interesting that people have been coming to it for, you know, they have their special mm-hmm. tables. They really love books, and especially, you know, we sell actually paper books. And in the era of electronics, you know, these are true bibliophiles. They love the books. They love to hear about this. And what I think is fascinating, you know, and I like what you said, this is a thriller, yet it has deeper themes. And, you know, one of the themes that I thought was Ellie's sacrifice. What was she willing to sacrifice for this new love? And amazingly, that seems to be a theme in all these books, maybe uh-huh. because we have strong female protagonists. You know, what was the relationship with her family? What did they... why did they do what they did? Did being a woman was an you know, in some of these novels, it's an advantage. It's also a disadvantage. My ideal world, I'd love, you know, to be in a class, have these six books on the syllabus, and then have to compare and contrast these themes. And, you know, obviously they're not going to have time to do that, but that's my ideal world.
Well, and in terms of that, you mentioned that, you know, in the selection process, you didn't set out – you know, to emphasize female protagonists or anything like that. Is that common, though, when you're trying to decide who's going to appear at this, that you'll find almost that a theme has emerged just because that...
Well, we know our audience. I mean, it's predominantly, it's a women. I mean, there are men there, but it's predominantly women. So, and everybody who read the books were women. And I mean, the guild's all women. So, yes, maybe that's like we pick books we like, and these, you know, strong women, the sacrifices we make for family really resonated with us all this year. I mean, sometimes. But I think all of these books, they're very different. You know, we have a mystery, we have historical fiction, we have, you know, obviously Nina's thriller, but they all kind of are deep. I like what you said. They're fun, they're popular books, but they speak to a deeper meaning. And I think that's really what resonated with our committee. It was like, yeah, it's a thriller, it's fun, it's what's going to happen next. I like what you said. Yeah, she wakes up and there's a dead body. And immediately you're like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. But there's so much more to it.
Well, and is that part of the joy for you, Nina, is trying to write at several different levels? You know, to keep the pages turning, obviously, but then occasionally you want people to stop and think.
Absolutely. I think that's been true with everything I've worked with on projects on film, too. I recognize that if you're working in a popular medium, you know, you have to speak to a lot of people, and that finds themes that resonate, you know, across demographics, you know, and that's, you know, for me, what's been very exciting, I alluded to this a little before, but not only different countries have responded mm-hmm. to the book, people from completely different cultural backgrounds, but all ages, men, women, it's, you know, been really across demographics, the response. But for me, I've always thought, well, just because you're doing something popular and mass culture doesn't mean that you can't be smart and that you can't have deeper themes and deeper meanings. Some people may not get it, but, you know, you hope that your readers are smart, and they do. And, you know, that's been really exciting because people get different things out of the book, sometimes things I haven't even seen, which is even better because it means that on an unconscious level something was communicated that, you know, and then I go, oh, yeah, you're right. I was thinking about that then, you know, and it just sort of bled in. I think that every writer, you know, sort of takes their own personal experience and opinions and perspective and applies that to the lens of the story they're telling. So we are always informed, and I like to think of myself, you know, I'm a highly educated, informed mm-hmm. person, and I like to think of myself that way. I like to think that I'm taking on issues. You know, I mean, some people have talked about in the book how there is a sort of, it's a subplot, but about spousal abuse and its mm-hmm. cost. And, you know, that was important to me, too, because, you know, that is, you know, it's another issue, violence against women, that, you know, that I'm very interested in addressing. And so, you know, but I did it in a pop culture way, and a number of people have commented on me that was really chilling, and it really made me think differently about what I thought about spousal abuse. And so that was exciting. And I didn't take it out as a mission when I wrote the book, but it was something that I thought about, that I thought I could turn a lens on, and I did, and that resonated. So that was really exciting. I'm dealing with issues in my new book as well, issues of, you know, gun use and gun trafficking and the dark net and its influence on culture. And so I think that, you know, I think you can always find the balance between entertainment. It is not always easy. You know, I was very conscious of in Just Fall that I wanted to keep everyone on a razor's edge of, wow, I'm not sure, do I like this woman, do I not? One great quote I got from one of the first readers at Random House was that the book made them ask, who do I know that could be a killer, and then say, well, maybe I don't have to look any further than the mirror. And I love that because I thought, well, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, we all have our lines that we might cross. You know, the question, what would you do if, is very different if it's followed by, it was your mother, your sister, your child, or in Ellie's case, your husband, right? I think that, you know, things that we would maybe say absolutely never to would be different if it was someone we loved at stake. And I think I wanted to push people to examine those kinds of moral questions. And they seem to be doing that, which I think is wonderful.
And you set this up a couple of minutes ago when you said the things you like to know about other writers. Who were, did you have any inspirations, other writers that you saw out there as possible role models?
Well, I'm obsessed with Kate Atkinson, who's a wonderful writer who does a series of mysteries with this character, Jackson Brody, but who also writes novels that are not mysteries. I think she's wonderful. She's probably my favorite living writer. I've read everything she's written. Certainly I was influenced by the canon of mystery writers, everyone from Mickey Spillane and Raymond Chandler, Dorothy Sayers, Agatha Christie, P.D. James, you know, right up to Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, sort of the more contemporary ones, just because, you know, for me, that was always the genre I read for fun, to relax. I'm a big reader, but that, you know, when I didn't want to be challenged or wanted something lighter, beach reading, it was always a thriller, which goes against what I said about them having deeper meaning, but I would find it. It wasn't the agenda with it. But I admire a lot of writers, and I'm always excited to be turned on to someone new. When you come across a new voice that you haven't read, not necessarily new, but someone you haven't read before, it's really thrilling. I also love Margaret Atwood as someone who's been a longtime favorite. But I think that I was also influenced a little bit by noir filmmakers, and some filmmakers I really admire. For example, I love Danny Boyle. I love Martin Scorsese. I love Stanley Kubrick, because I think these are all filmmakers that keep you on that edge of your seat. They can take sort of blown out, extraordinary experiences of whether it's Scorsese talking about mob life or Danny Boyle and some of the extreme topics that he's gone into, Slumdog Millionaire or whatever. These filmmakers can take you into a very exotic locations and situations that feel very foreign to you and still find a way to have you relate to the characters. So I think I was influenced by both filmmakers as well as writers.
We're getting close to the end of the program. Paige, I ought to give you a chance here to sell a few more tickets, tell people
Absolutely.
What the event is, when it will be, and where they can buy the tickets.
If you want to hear amazing authors like Nina, there will be six of them. It's April 15th at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. Tickets are on sale through Tuesday at ChristamoreGuild.org. And if you go on there, you'll see immediately how to buy your tickets.
Yeah, there's a button up at the top, if I'm not mistaken, that says Books and Authors, and you can follow
here.
That. And the cost is $85.
$85, but it goes
to attend.
To scholarships, yep.
And the bulk of it does.
A little bit goes
to the meal. Well, I would like to thank both of you. This has been a fascinating conversation. Like to thank my guest, Nina Sadowski, who is the author of the just-published book, Just Fall. She's going to be one of the writers featured at the Christmore House Guild's 36th Annual Book and Author Luncheon, and the event's co-chair, Paige Button. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.